Blog Talk Radio.
Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Our number to call in is 718-506-1944, 718-506-1944. It's a rainy Wednesday here in the nation's capital, and as we do the show live, we are 2 days past Columbus Day 2014. It's not just a federal holiday. It salutes a guy who every school kid in America, and maybe all over the world, thinks of as the guy who discovered the New World back in 1492. But our guest today says, not so fast. It's Gary Knight. He's the author of Forgotten Brothers. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the Burke Allen Show.
Pleasure to be here, Burke.
So I have to ask you, at what point is it that you got interested in this and you thought, this is my mission. I'm going to take down this Christopher Columbus guy and spread the word as to what really happened back in 1492.
Well, it's not so much I want to take down Columbus, but I wanted to get the perception of the Pinzon brothers, who were the Forgotten Brothers, raised their profile in the minds of the American public, because most people, educated people in Spain and South America, know all about the Pinzon brothers. I'm half Spanish on my mother's side, and so I've heard about the Pinzon brothers for years from my relatives. So about 15 years ago, I got this burn to tell their story.
Our guest, Gary Knight, has written this book, Forgotten Brothers, about the Pinzon brothers. And you have been everywhere around Columbus Day, and there's, you know, certainly some controversy around Christopher Columbus. The more that people talk about this whole thing, that maybe he was not the good guy that has been painted by history. So talk to me about that. What did you learn when you got into sort of researching this that might surprise our listeners about Christopher Columbus?
Well, I learned that he owed his success of his first mission, both before it started and clearly at the end, to the activities and the basically the performance of the Pinzon brothers. Martin Pinzon, who was in his mid-50s, and his younger brother by 16 years, Vicente Pinzon. People forget or didn't know to begin with that even though Ferdinand and Isabella gave Columbus two ships, the populace of the port in which he left, the Palos, didn't trust him. They thought he was an instrument of the devil, because for years he had said, basically, this is the will of God, this is the will of God, and so forth. And they got tired of it, thought he was the instrument of the devil, and they destroyed his ships. In real life, this is a factual book, but obviously I had to take some literary license on a couple of points. The populace pulled the seacocks, and they sank at their moorings, and that wasn't sexy enough, so I had a fire, because it's much more fun to write about a fire or read about a fire. And they destroyed the two ships. So he was basically went to Martin Pinzon, the head of the Pinzon maritime family, successful for years in shipbuilding and trading, and said, I need your help. And Martin Pinzon, who himself also had gone to Rome to see the Pope and his minions, thought also that there was a way of finding the Orient by going due west. So he was waiting for Columbus, and they struck a deal. Columbus, in effect, would be the chief operating officer, the CEO. He would be overall charge, because obviously he had the imprimatur of the crown. And Martin Pinzon would be the COO in charge of the ships, and the crew in the chandlery. And they agreed that when they returned and all their riches, what they expected to glean, that obviously they would give the crown its cut from the top, and then the Martin Pinzon and Columbus would split the remainder, which is something that Columbus later reneged on. And they brought along
Gary Knight. The book is Forgotten Brothers, and Gary spent a lifetime on the water, a U.S. Naval Academy grad, and worked on Capitol Hill and the Bush 1 presidency. So, you said it's a work of historical fiction, only in that you had to fill in a few of the blanks. But a lot of this, as I've looked through the book, is very much a matter of public record. But not well known in the United States. So if you grow up in Spain, you know about these guys. You know about the Pinzon brothers, and here in the United States, not so much. Well, why do you think that is? Why is there a sort of a knowledge gap as you cross the ocean there?
Well, it was better known in the 1800s. I went to a website called A Books, which sells out of print books. And I bought about 60 books, most of them out of print, a lot of them from the 1800s written by historians, and their view of Columbus's voyage was far different than we all learned in a history class. And those, in fact, one of the writers even called him the so-called Columbus because they denigrated his role. But it's just basically the history books. And I don't know who writes history books, but clearly they all, took the line that Columbus was the man, and he put down the mutiny and everything. His success was all owed to himself. But when you get into the facts, and this is an historical fiction book because I had to make up dialogue from people talking 500 years ago. And only Bob Woodward and Bernstein fame can make up dialogue and call it nonfiction with a straight face. I even have two pages of footnotes in the back because I had an editor early on that says, is this really true? And so I said, well, the editor questioned whether things were really true when they happened, other people will as well. So I documented and had 2 pages of footnotes of telling people where they can find proof of what I was saying in the story.
The book is Forgotten Brothers. It's a fascinating look at that first voyage to the new country and the new world back in 1492, and the supposition that the author Gary Knight has that maybe Christopher Columbus was not, as you say, the man. Maybe the Pinzon brothers had a lot more to do with it. So when you look at Martin and it's Vicente Pinzon, are they at the end of this whole thing with Christopher Columbus, are they penniless? Did they come out of this thing okay? I mean, what happened when Christopher Columbus gets back with all the spoils?
Well, and we're jumping far ahead, but you're the interviewer. Martin Pinzon, very Shakespearean, literally died the day after they returned home because, he was in his mid-50s. His body was worn out and beaten up, in fact, because they had sailed through two major storms in the mid-Atlantic. The Niña, for example, was down to one tiny storm jib. All the rest of their sails were in shreds. And so it took a ravage on his body. And then when he beat Columbus back to Spain and sent a note to the sovereign saying, we had a successful voyage, we discovered new lands, I'll be pleased to meet you whenever you want me to. And they sent back a note saying, stay away, we want to talk to our paid mercenary, Columbus. And that was such a slap in the face, his own sovereigns turned him down, that he literally went home and died in bed the next day. But Vicente, now, naturally, they left their business in good hands, so they weren't penniless. They were still making money and trading and so forth. But Vicente became King Ferdinand's go-to guy as far as mariner things concerned. Columbus had a hold over Isabella, and she was always loyal to him and believed anything he told her. Ferdinand, though, was looked at things with a more jaundiced eye. And they promised Columbus that Columbus would have control over any future explorations westward from Spain. And Isabella insisted that they honor that. But Ferdinand said this is too important and too big to leave under control of one guy. So Ferdinand hired Vicente Pinzón and another Italian under the tutelage of Spain, who we've all heard of, Amerigo Vespucci, to take a secret voyage to the West, because Columbus thought for sure that he discovered either a new continent or a new part of the continent of China when he found Cuba, because most people aren't aware of the fact that Cuba is like 600 miles long, and he sailed it for on the southern coast of Cuba for several days and never reached the end. So he said, well, this is a continent, and he turned back before he reached the end. And so Ferdinand sent him out and says, just find out if this Cuba is a continent or not. Well, they got blown south, and they landed in the northern coast of South America and saw that that clearly was a continent, sailed it to the west, went up Central America, went to North America and all the way around Florida and all the way up to North Carolina and came home. And he said, don't report to anybody but me. He was afraid that Isabella would learn about the secret voyage. And don't publish any reports. Well, the only way we know that that voyage took place was because Amerigo Vespucci drew a map of everything they learned. And that got in the hands of some German cartographers who redrew the map of the world, and with Amerigo's name on it, they called it America. And that's what we call America. So they weren't penniless.
Research on this book, did you learn things that you didn't know? Were there things that surprised you that you
uncovered? Sure. Very much so. Very much so. Like 3 days after they left Spain, going to the West, the rudder pin of the Pinta that Martin Pinzón was captain of broke. The lines that secure the rudder broke, and there were several sources that I read that said that Columbus had a cohort on the Pinta as kind of a spy, and told him to cut those ropes through, but not all the way through, so that at least a day or two of sailing would sever them, and then he couldn't steer, and he'd have to go back to Spain. So Columbus wouldn't have that rival with him, so he would have total supremacy over the voyage. But Martin Pinzón was such a good sailor, they were able to jerry-rig something and steer toward the Canary Islands, which, let's face it, all the exploration voyages stopped at the Canary Islands first. It was like getting your feet wet. You sail for a week and end up at Canary Islands before you head off across the Atlantic. And so he was able to get him there and fix the rudder and so forth and keep up. I mean, I had no idea that Columbus and his perfidy would do something that so low-handed. But the main thing was that Columbus tried to get Vicente and the Niña to follow him and leave Martin Pinzón behind. And what it did was create enmity between Columbus and every member of the fleet, because all these crew had sailed with the Pinzón brothers for years. So they were respected and trusted. And Columbus had never captained a ship in his entire life. And nevertheless, that he was a foreigner, and Spaniards are very provincial, and so they don't trust anybody from another province, nevertheless another country. And so you have to prove yourself. And then when he starts trying to leave Martin Pinzón behind, what admiral goes off and leaves a third of their command? So they say, what is this guy about? So everybody, especially on the Santa Maria, was very unsettled. And then that was the second thing he did. The first thing he did was he changed the name of the flagship from La Gallega to Santa Maria. And any sailor is superstitious as heck, And you don't, the worst thing you can do is change the name of a ship. That's just very bad luck. So anyway, they
the
get
book
to
is the, called Forgotten Brothers, and Gary Knight is the author. Gary, when we come back, I want to get into some of these misconceptions that, that every school kid in America has, you know, about the Columbus voyage. So if you will, stick around more with Gary Knight right after this on the Burke Allen Show.
Sure.
Over 14 million people witnessed his emotional story of survival and triumph on national television.
I've been doing this stuff for so long, like ever since I was a kid.
Millions more voted him their favorite in a landslide win.
The winner is...
And now, you can be a part of the experience live.
Landau Eugene Murphy!
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Ain't that a kick in the head?
Your America's Got Talent winner.
I've got you.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Under my
live, live. Performing classics from the Great American Songbook and his Columbia Records debut CD, That's Life.
That's Life.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.'s That's Life Tour. The one concert event this year you absolutely can't miss.
See Landau Eugene Murphy Jr. live in concert. For a full list of dates, visit LandauMurphyJr.com. It's the Burke Allen Show on the Vlog Talk Radio Network, and like the words to the song said, they don't write them like that anymore. We're talking to author Gary Knight today. The book is Forgotten Brothers, and Gary, I guess one of the reasons that I've learned from reading your book that Christopher Columbus has come across so well in the history books is he is the guy who wrote it all down. He kept the journal that sort of down through the years has become the Bible of this whole event. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I learned a long time ago in politics that he who controls the paper controls the discussion. And if you're the only person that kept a journal, then obviously your story is going to be paramount as far as what people remember about it.
And then people, he had a, you know, today look at this as something you learn in elementary school, that everyone in the world back in 1492 thought the earth was flat, and if you went too far, you were going to go over the edge. Is that in fact the case? Was that the prevailing wisdom in the 1400s?
No. All the sailors knew that you could see the tops of the sails before you saw the hull of the ship. So Washington Irving, who wrote the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, he perpetuated that myth, but no one since Washington Irving, who wrote a book about Columbus, has perpetrated that myth.
But, so if, in fact, the folks we all didn't think that the earth was flat, what did they think? That there was something out there, but nobody knew what, and nobody had actually gone to explore it yet?
Yeah, it was called the Sea of Darkness. It was called the Sea of Darkness because no one had traveled more than, say, several days away from land out to the west. And we all learn in the history books that all three ships had mutinies on them. Well, again, it's bunk. when they reached the point that Columbus had promised all the crews that they would reach land, and they hadn't, there were problems of almost mutiny on the Santa Maria. But that didn't happen on the Nina and the Pinta, again, because those crews had sailed with the Pinzon brothers for years, and they were respected, and they were trusted. And when Martin Pinzon saw a couple people in the crew standing in front of Columbus yelling at him in his face, toe-to-toe, he swung his ship by real close, and he yelled out on a speakerphone, you know, it's not like an unpowered megaphone, a speaking trumpet is what I meant to say. Then, and he yelled, he says, if there's any more trouble with you against Columbus, myself and my bosuns, who are the toughest guys on board any ship, will come aboard and hang the miscreants. So the problem stopped. And then 3 days later, they hit land. Now, again, one of the reasons why I call Columbus a charlatan is that the crown promised that whoever spotted land first would get a lifetime pension of 10,000 maravedis a year. Now, a normal sailor got 5 to 6 maravedis a day. That was the pay. So 10,000 a year for the rest of their life would make someone really rich. And the guy in the crow's nest in the Pinta, which was always 2 or 3 hours in front of the other two ships, saw land first and claimed the prize. But when they got back to Spain, Columbus claimed it for himself. Says, I saw land first. That's what kind of guy he was. Then when they finally reached the islands, when they finally reached the islands, they found that the Indians were generous, friendly. Oh, they were in awe. They thought they were gods from heaven. You know, with these big white sails, they were angels from heaven. But if a Spaniard would admire a piece of jewelry or something, they'd immediately take it off and give it to the Spaniard. Or if you admired someone's woman, they'd give you the woman. They were that generous. And meek and mild is what Columbus put in his journal, and even talked about they would make perfect slaves, which when Vicente read that, he was appalled. But it soon became obvious to the Pinzon brothers that Columbus was more interested in the source of the gold of the instruments, these implements that these natives were wearing, rather than continuing to find the Orient. And after 2 or 3 weeks of this, Martin pulled his younger brother over and said, look, this idiot who's never been a sea captain in his whole life, sooner or later is going to run into disaster. The Santa Maria drew 12 feet of water, and they were sailing in the epitome of uncharted water. So sooner or later, he's going to hit something and wreck his ship. So stay to the sea, seaward of him. Be safe. Stay to the seaward of him. Do your duty, but stay to the seaward. And he says, I will. But he says, but aren't you going to be there too? And he goes, yeah. Well, they finally went from all these islands in the Bahamas to Cuba. And they said, okay, well, this is it. Let's go. And he sent out several diplomatic missions to find the Grand Khan and find the riches and the palaces and stuff. And all they found was grass huts. Well, the one thing they did find was tobacco. Indians smoking what they call torches. And it was cigars. And so that was turned out to be very, very, very valuable. But after a while, when it clear that Columbus wasn't going to detach and go to the west to find a continent, Martin Pinzon took off to find the source of the gold, because to him, Columbus had changed the mission of the fleet, which was to find the gold rather than to find the way to the Orient. And he took off, which made Columbus very paranoid, because he was more worried about Pinzon finding the gold and getting back to Spain and gleaning all the glory for himself. And he didn't change the way he operated, other than the fact that now he wouldn't talk to Vicente at all, because he thought maybe Vicente was a spy. But they finally went across the Windward Passage and found Hispaniola, which is the island on which now sits Haiti and Dominican Republic. Hispaniola is a beautiful island, has mountains on it. Many of the scenery look just like Andalusia in southwestern Spain. So many of the names that Columbus gave to things were names of similar promontories in Spain. And the Indians were crops were lush and ripe, and there was varieties and so forth. We didn't have coconut palms until Columbus brought them back from there. Everybody knows corn was brought back from the New World, but also coconut palms. So they were feasted by all these different tribes that they'd run across, and sometimes they'd anchor 2 miles out, and 500 people, the natives, would swim out to them. How much they were in awe of the Spaniards. They thought they were gods. So finally they met the big king of the island, and who threw them a big, big banquet, and they were all hung over and full of food and so forth. And on Christmas Eve, the Santa Maria hit a reef and sank. Martin Pinzon's prediction came true, and if it weren't for Vicente and the Nina to seaward and close by, sent over a ship's boat and rescued every member of the crew, not a single crewman was lost, then Columbus would have been either drowned or would have been stuck on Hispaniola, and all the people who were left behind, because the Nina wasn't big enough to have the crew of the Nina and the Santa Maria to sail back. The Nina was 65 feet long. They left most of the crew of the Santa Maria on a fort built from the Santa Maria's ribs, and over the course of a year, they killed some of themselves off through internecine warfare, but ultimately they ticked off the Indians enough because of them raiding their villages and stealing gold and stealing their women that the Indians had enough and wiped them all out. And if Columbus had been stuck there, he would have been wiped out as well, and no one would have ever heard of him again. But because of Vicente Pinzon right there to pick him up, we obviously know about Columbus. A couple weeks later, they ran into the Pinta. They had a reconciliation and a very traumatic conversation, which is, in my view, the highlight of the book. But Columbus wanted to hang Martin as a traitor, as a deserter. But before he could say a word, Martin said, "Look, you brought this on yourself. You changed the purpose of the mission from finding a way to the Orient to finding gold. And we weren't going to do it by plodding around all these little islands. So I went to find the source of the gold and found it." And from that moment, Columbus's whole demeanor changed. Like, my mission will be a success. And Martin Pinzon was just an underling of his again and not a rival. So a couple days later, they took off to come back to Spain, sailing together. But they hit two major storms, as I said earlier, and were split up. Columbus landed in Portugal first, and he had approached the Portuguese king for 5 years, way before he ever went to Isabel and Ferdinand, who received him with honor and was mad at himself when he found out everything he had discovered. And then he offered to let his troops take him inland to Spain, and Columbus thought the better of it, that they might never find his body if that happened. But the king of Spain fixed up the Nina for free, gave it all new sails, and replenished all the equipment that was damaged in the storms, and sailed back. And as I said, Martin Pinzon had landed in northern Spain and sent a note to the crown, and they just by coincidence they happened to come in to their home port in Palos on the same tide. But the note was waiting for Martin from the crown saying, "Stay away. We want to hear from Columbus, not you." And he went home and died, and Columbus got all these honors. But there's a 30-page epilogue describing what Vicente did the rest of his life. Vicente ended up discovering the Amazon River. They know the name Vicente Pinzon in Brazil real well. He was named the first governor of Puerto Rico. And Vicente and Amerigo Vespucci were named by King Ferdinand as his go-to guys, that if you wanted to have an exploration, you had to clear it with them, and you had to follow the maps that they standardized in basically a school of navigation. Magellan and Cortez both went to that school. And Vicente died a happy, successful man after a long life. But he always had a hole in his heart because his older brother Martin had died early. And because, as you say, because Columbus kept a journal, Columbus, in effect, won the battle for notoriety.
It's just a fascinating look back at history. The book is Forgotten Brothers, about Martin and Vicente Pinzon, and maybe it shouldn't be Columbus Day. Maybe it should be Pinzon Day. Gary Knight is the author, and it's Electrico Publishing. If you'd like more information, the book is available on Amazon.com, online everywhere, and at bookstores all over the USA. Gary Knight has been our guest today on the Burke Allen Show. Thank you so much for listening from our studios here in Washington, D.C. I'm Burke Allen. Now, go out and make it a great day.